This is Jonathan Lane of Fan Film Factor, and today I am here with the one, the only, Mark Zagree of Space Command.
Glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. Okay, so today we're going to discuss your current Kickstarter campaign for Space Command. Mm-hmm. That campaign ends on August 27th. Mm-hmm. It's already exceeded its $45,000 goal, and in fact, your campaign took in over $33,000 even before opening to the general public.
Yeah, that was great.
There was a short early bird period, folks, open only to previous donors, and then once they turned on the lights and went public, they crossed the $45,000 goal about 6 days later, and right now, with 2 weeks still left, they're at a very impressive $66,000. So, Mark, the first question for all those people who only listen to the first 2 minutes of these kind of interviews, quickly...
I'll be quick.
Yeah. Quickly give folks the elevator pitch. What is Space Command, and why should folks give you money to finish making it?
Well, you know, I grew up watching Star Trek and Twilight Zone and Outer Limits, the original versions of those shows, and that's what made me want to be a writer working in television. And, in fact, I wrote The Twilight Zone Companion when I was in my early 20s to learn how great television shows were made. And I noticed in recent years that a lot of the science fiction was very dark and very dystopic and very negative. And much as I like things like Battlestar Galactica, I wanted to do something that would be inspiring and hopeful and say that we can reach across boundaries and barriers, that we mustn't give in to fear and divisiveness, and that love and compassion are active forces in the world, and they can create a future worth living in for ourselves and our children. And so I created Space Command. And I didn't want a network to say whether or not it would get cut off at script or cut off at pilot. I wanted it to be something that the audience would have the say over. And so I, you know, reached out to them, and they financed it where I was able to shoot the two-hour pilot with a lot of the actors that we all love from Star Trek Discovery and The Orville and Babylon 5 and Stargate Atlantis and on Orange is the New Black. And I've just been having the time of my life. It's a wonderful journey.
Now, this is actually your third Kickstarter campaign. Your first was way back in 2012.
Yeah.
In fact, it was one of the
yes.
first sci-fi fan film Kickstarter campaigns. It took in a very impressive $220,000
yes.
2,000 donors. Your next campaign was last November. It took in $109,000,
huh.
and that was the first part of your post-production. You have a two-hour pilot
yes.
Called Redemption, and so
yes.
you wanted to fund the first half an hour of that two-hour pilot. And you ended up getting enough money, $109,000, to fund the first full hour of post-production on that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yeah.
And so now it's just 8 months after your last Kickstarter.
yes.
Once again, you've exceeded your $45,000 goal. You're across
yeah.
$66,000. So there's a whole bunch of people out there who are crowdfunding themselves who want
yes.
to know, Mark, what's your secret? Why do people keep throwing money at you?
Well, it's really an interesting thing. I was talking to Ron Moore about this the other day, you know, who created Battlestar Galactica and the recent one and Outlander and the new show for Apple. And I was talking about how when we both came up in television originally, the idea was that you did not reveal your process to your audience. Your communication with your audience was solely you write the show, they make the show, they air the show, and maybe you get a letter every now and then, and maybe you talk at a convention every now and then, and that's about it. The new relationship between the showrunner and the audience is the exact reverse, where you're totally transparent, totally authentic, and you bring them into your process, and they're essentially your collaborators on that process, and part of the fun is they get to see step by step by step how you're creating this amazing thing. And so that's the fun part. So I really like that dialogue. In fact, I have my own YouTube channel called Mr. Sci-Fi, where I'm posting about once a week on things about science fiction. I might talk about, you know, Star Trek Discovery 1 week, or I might talk about what we're doing on Space Command, or about the new Twilight Zone Companion, or anything that I care to talk about relating to science fiction. And
walking your dog, by the way.
Exactly. Yes. And again, it's the sense of letting everyone in to the party, essentially, that everyone is part of the family. And I really like that. And, you know, you mentioned I raised $221,000 initially, and then I sold investment shares of $7,500 each to some of those backers and raised another $500,000. And then, as you said, I've had the two campaigns for post-production, and we're still moving forward. And the dogs go off.
Speaking of the dogs.
You know, yeah, the dogs, the puppies. We now have two puppies. We have these terriers and brother and sister. But the point is that the difference between working for a studio like Paramount or Universal, you know, I've worked for all the major studios and networks, I've done hundreds of hours of network TV, the difference is that when you're creating something away from the studio and the network, you're building everything from the ground up. And so when you mentioned the first campaign was in 2012, it took from 2012 to 2014 to basically just build the sets, cast the actors, make the costumes, build the infrastructure, and then we shot the entire two-hour pilot. And then in 2015, we shot 40 minutes of the second one. We're going to be shooting the rest of that one, hopefully in December. You know, I've written the first 8 hours of the 12-hour season, and now I'm actively pitching the show. But the whole point of it is I don't have to wait for someone to give me permission to make this. I can actually make it. And people like Doug Jones and Bob Picardo and Mira Furlan and Bill Mumy, all these wonderful actors, are happy to take the journey with me. And when you consider that an hour of Star Trek Discovery costs over $10 million and an hour of Game of Thrones costs $15 million, and we're making, you know, two hours and 40 minutes of Space Command for under $1 million, you know, it's pretty amazing. And we're still going strong. The two-hour pilot has 1,900 visual effect shots, which is more than a major feature would have, more than something like Black Panther would have. You know, but as you mentioned, I've just released the first half hour, which we premiered at Comic-Con, and we're moving forward. We're going to be premiering the first hour at the Drama Summit in London in November. And, you know, we're just moving along, and now I'm actively pitching the show. And we'll see how it goes. This is all unknown territory, but the lovely thing is, it's not where the network says whether or not this will exist. The network doesn't have a say in that. The audience has a say in that, and they've said, we want this. And I'm very gratified by that.
Well, you've just led into my next two questions, and I just have to decide which one I'm going to ask first. So at this point, you have released, or you have produced and released, at least for your donors,
yes,
the first half an hour. And
yes,
I would have thought, if you were kicking off your Kickstarter, that you would want that half an hour of footage out there for basically for people to go, holy crap, he can do this. This is fantastic. I want to give him money to make more. But you haven't done that. You've only made it available to donors. It's not public yet, right?
Well, it's very interesting that you mention that because I just released it publicly at midnight last night. So if you go on Mr. Sci-Fi on YouTube, and it's SCI-FI, you can watch that half hour. And I think everyone will be very impressed. But the fun part is that it's still very much a work in progress. So anyone who watched the version we put out a few weeks ago to our backers or saw it at Comic-Con will notice that certain shots are now different and improved. And it's an ongoing process of improving the things. You know, I mentioned that it was, you know, our visual effects, some of them were a little rough around the edges because it was, you know, a photo finish to get it ready for Comic-Con, and because there's over 500 visual effects shots in that first half hour. So the opening has some different shots, the closing minutes have some different shots. It's really fun. And Tobias Richter in Germany is busy at work with his team completely redoing the opening sequence, the teaser, just because I think we can have even more amazing visual effects. So that's part of the fun of this process. And again, this is something you would never do with an on-air show, with the exception of Babylon 5. Interestingly enough, the pilot of Babylon 5, they aired it, and Joe Straczynski wasn't happy with certain aspects of it. So later, years later, he actually redid the pilot and made many changes in it. So that's kind of interesting. But that's the only case I know of that.
I remember the handshaking scene with Bosch, and they realized that he actually had a hand. Bosch had a hand shaking. I remember he was that bugged him incredibly. Anyway, I didn't know it was open to the general public and that you've managed to, you know, because I saw it a few weeks ago when you first released it, and I thought to myself, this is really, really good. And I also noticed that there were a few things like, it could be a little better here or there. And so I'm glad to hear that. And I have to ask the question. One of the biggest complaints I heard was that in the scene where the father and son are driving in the convertible, that their hair's not moving, even though, you know, it should be blowing in the wind.
Well,
have you fixed that?
Well, here's an interesting thing. If you look at the first shot of Jack, the son, his hair is moving, and we actually shot that as a separate element and added it through visual effects, but we just didn't have the time to do every shot that way, but we will be. And we're going to be significantly improving that scene. We've actually been meeting with our visual effects team, and so there's going to be reflections on the windows, like the windshields. There's going to be the hair blowing. There's going to be a lot of different stuff. And in fact, so that again is a work in progress. And again, this is very fun because we can have our audience be in direct commentary with us, and that's again something that you're not allowed generally with a network, you know, and so that's very fun. And for one thing, I would never, if I were writing for a TV show like Star Trek Discovery or The Orville, I would never write a two-hour episode with 1,900 visual effects shots. It would, you know, they'd kick me to the curb. And but again, because it's my show, I can design it any way I want. And for me, a big part of my career has been taking on projects that are impossible and then pulling them off. So that's either something that needs medication or it's one of my strengths. I can't tell, but it's really fun, and that's again why I get such a loyal audience and such great actors and collaborators and so forth. I mean, Ian McKaig, who designed Darth Maul and Queen Amidala and Rey in The Force Awakens and the villain in the most recent Avengers movie, he's been like my character designer on everything I've done in the last 20 years. And he doesn't do small independent projects, but because we're on the same wavelength, he works on Space Command. And so it's really cool. So you get a much higher level of design work, caliber of actor, everything, just because you're coming to the equation with quality and with the ability to pull it off. And so and a few years ago, I did a Star Trek episode, Star Trek New Voyages, with George Takei. And it was the great Sulu episode, and it was done without a studio, without a network. If you go on Mr. Sci-Fi, my YouTube channel, you can watch the episode in its entirety. And it was nominated for the Hugo and Nebula, which are the two top awards in science fiction, and no independent project had ever been nominated for those. And I was up against Battlestar Galactica and Doctor Who and Pan's Labyrinth. And that, interestingly enough, led directly to my writing a book with Guillermo del Toro, because his publishers approached me and said, well, would you like to write a book with Guillermo? And I said, yes. But again, the fun part about my career is that because I don't draw any kind of line between me and my audience or between me and the other creative souls, I'm associating with people at the top of the film and TV business, but also able to greenlight myself. And so it's fun. It's fun that I have a freedom that most of my friends who are doing very expensive TV shows and movies, they don't have that freedom often. Their dream projects, they don't get to make by and large because the networks are deciding what they get to make. And I'm deciding, and my audience is deciding what I get to make.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was having a conversation with when I posted the initial link to your Kickstarter with somebody who was being constructively critical.
Yes.
With how you had laid out some scenes and some of the choices you had made. And ultimately, mm-hmm. I said, you know, I'm going to trust Mark on this only because it really is his project. And I said, you made some excellent choices, but at the same point in time, you know, somebody has to be in charge. Now, the thing is all too often the network is in charge, you know, no matter what the creators want to do, there's somebody higher up saying, you know, oh, you know, change the look of the Klingons or, you know, make the uniforms all sparkly disco outfits.
And right, yeah, exactly.
So, you know, anyway, it must feel, you know, really amazing for you to have that kind of control, you know, and to be able to decide, you know, you control the vertical, you control the horizontal.
Yes, exactly. And the fun part also is that, you know, the audience doesn't know yet where the story is going. I mean, boy, when they see where we're going, it's going to be thrilling because we're just getting going with that first half hour. That half hour has some action sequences. It establishes the world. It establishes the characters. But then, you know, I'm not going to spoil where it goes, but it's really fun and really exciting. And of course, I've laid out an arc for the entire first season, and then we would go to five seasons or more. And so there's a big, big, big story and a big canvas. And it's super fun. But the other thing that it allows me to do, for instance, we had a screening and a Space Command panel and interviews and photo shoots and a Space Command booth at Comic-Con. And I got a call a few days before Comic-Con, and a friend of mine said, I have a big favor to ask. And I said, what is it? And he said, Nichelle Nichols needs a place to sign, do a signing, and could we use your booth? And I said, of course. My God, Nichelle Nichols. I met her when I was 10 years old, and she was on Star Trek. And so she came, and she was wonderful and very gracious, and her team was great. And I immediately thought of a scene in Space Command that I would love her to do. And it's very interesting because, you know, they've just announced that she has sort of like early stage dementia. But I'm getting a conversation with her team because she's wonderful. She's an icon. We would make it super easy for her to do the scene. We'd make it as comfortable as possible. And if it works, great. And if it doesn't work, fine. If, for instance, let's say they say, well, let's shoot it. And let's say for a moment it didn't work out. Well, we'd scrap it, and that would be that. But I could never have that conversation with a network to say, hey, I want to hire this actress who's, you know, and she may not be able to pull it off. Well, you know, they wouldn't, they'd say no, and it would be no. But instead, I'm able to have a very full and interesting creative relationship with everyone that I determine, you know, and I respect my actors, and I love, and I'm going to be working with Armin Shimerman and Ethan Phillips and Gigi Edgley from Farscape and all these wonderful actors, because I want to, because they're talented and they're wonderful, and my audience loves them as much as I do. And I don't, if I'd asked back when I cast the pilot of Space Command, if I'd asked the network to let me cast Doug Jones, they would have said, who's Doug Jones? And, you know, they wouldn't have known who that is. And I would have said, well, he's terrific. And they would say, well, we're sorry, but there's this actor from the CW we want you to cast instead, and he can't act, but he's just been in this show. And it's like, well, and they're writing the checks. And so I would have to say, well, okay, or I would have to say, no, I'll quit, or whatever. But now, of course, they all know who Doug Jones is because of Shape of Water and Star Trek Discovery. But I was, you know, but I was just going on who's terrific and who do I want to work with and who's incredibly talented and who will be great. And that was my only criteria. And so
and you were right, because I'll tell you, folks, if you haven't watched, I'm going to put a link to it above this interview so people can see the first half hour. But
great.
You know, Doug Jones is amazing. Robert Picardo is amazing. Your casting decisions were just fantastic.
Well, thank you. And but this is also where sometimes my audience is very helpful, because one of my audience asked, he said, are there foreign languages in space? And he didn't mean Klingon or Vulcan. He meant like French. And so when I worked with Mira Furlan on Babylon 5, I remember that she spoke Serbo-Croatian because she's from the former Yugoslavia. And I met a young actress in recent years who spoke that same language. And so I cast them as mother and daughter. So when they're speaking to each other, it's a mixture of English and Serbo-Croatian. And then when they speak to other people, it's English. But again, that brings a certain texture and a certain reality to it. And I'm utilizing the skills of my actors. And I have a friend who's Muslim. His name is Yusuf Sikander. So I named Bob Picardo's character after that friend of mine. And my friend actually came to the set and showed Bob how to pray on a prayer rug and so forth, because he's a Muslim character. And it's not that he's the Muslim character. In other words, he's not the cliche Muslim. It's just an aspect of his spirituality. He's just a working guy. He's a foreman who works in the asteroid belt in a mining operation. And his son has been, you know, they lost the mother, you know, Bob's wife, in an accident. And he's just doing his best that he can. And but he's a Muslim, like I'm Jewish, and my friends were Catholic and so forth. So again, I'm basically creating a world that's similar to the world I live in. And there's all kinds of people and all races, all, you know, everything. So it's really fun to be playing in this universe.
So that leads to my other big question. Glad I saved it for second, which is, okay, so you are trying right now to sell this, and
you're
selling it to a network or to Netflix or somebody. I don't know who you're talking to.
Yes.
But ultimately, once you sell it, suddenly you will have overlords, won't you?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question, because I've been part of the last couple of years, and those who've been following me on Mr. Sci-Fi, I know I've been going to a lot of conferences and a lot of, and I've been flying to London and so forth, and meeting with a lot of executives at different networks and platforms to basically suss out who basically lets their series creators have their way, and who doesn't, who's very intrusive and who's not. And by doing my research, I know where to aim this project. But the other part of it is that there's an emerging model where ultimately I think it'll get to a point where the audience can finance an entire series. And I think, when I was a kid, Star Trek was canceled after the second season, and we had a letter-writing campaign and wrote a million letters and picketed NBC. I was all part of that as a kid, and they gave Star Trek a third season. Well, if that had happened now, Gene Roddenberry just would have launched a crowdfunding campaign and gotten the next season of Star Trek. So, and interestingly enough, at the last Drama Summit a few weeks ago here in Los Angeles, Rockne O'Bannon and I were on a panel together. I'd invited him. He's the creator of Farscape and Alien Nation and Sequest and Defiance and Cult, and they announced the Showrunners Network, which is a project that I'm starting. We'll be collaborating on six new pilots with six major showrunners, and our audience will finance those six pilots as a slate, and we will pitch those six shows as a slate of six series to whoever the buyers are. And no one has ever done this. but it will be the shows that we really, really, really want to do. And I've just generated 280 ideas just to kind of send to my partners and say, do any of these spark for you? Do you have something in your back pocket? And a lot of the other, there's going to be six of us beyond myself. And Rockne O'Bannon is the first one aboard, and there's a number of other people of very similar credits who that the audience will just love and will instantly know who they are when I announce it. And we're having those conversations now. And that's a project for 2019, and I'm not going to be leaving Space Command. I'm going to make sure that Space Command is, you know, is moving along well. But it's sort of like the next thing after that, beyond the new book I'm writing, which is called Greenlighting Yourself, and that's been sold and will come out next year as well.
Well, that's a lot of plugs.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's get back to the current Kickstarter. You're at $66,000 right now,
which
is obviously about 50% more than your goal.
Yeah.
Your $45,000 was to fund initially part three of the two-hour pilot. So how much do you need to finish it and get part four covered as well?
Well, you know, I'd really love the campaign before it ends in the next 2 weeks to top $100,000, because that would really be very, very helpful to what we're doing. Because my goal is to finish it and finish it wonderfully. And so part of this, you know, it's interesting because that is where there is a little bit of variation from the way it would be done on a network, because you try something, you see what works, you refine it. It's a constant process of improvement. But yes, the $100,000 would get us a very, very long way toward where we need to be. And I'm also still selling investment shares in Space Command, and that also helps a lot. And meantime, I'm pitching it. So if Netflix or Amazon or whomever buys it between now and, you know, 3-4 months from now, then it's a very different conversation. But I'm not going to sell it unless it's someone who really understands what we're doing and likes what we're doing, because otherwise this whole thing would have been pointless, because I don't think that, you know, I'm not interested in putting a silly robot or a kid or a dog or whatever, you know.
So you do have Bill Mumy in your pilot episode, you know.
I do.
Kid. He's not a kid anymore.
Exactly. Well, I've known him since I was seven, so it's been pretty amazing to be working with him. And I worked with him on Babylon 5, and I interviewed him when I wrote The Twilight Zone Companion. So we've had a long and very, very useful and fruitful relationship. But he's a great guy and just an incredible pro. I'm thrilled at having him on Space Command.
Well, that's cool. So if you get $100,000, then you basically finish the two-hour pilot. Is that correct, then?
That's the goal. But again, it's, you know, my audience has been incredibly patient with me, and they understand where it's sort of like, well, you know, let's, you know, that's the aim. But let's say for a moment that, you know, one thing isn't quite up to snuff, or there's something like the driving scene where it's like, okay, this clearly isn't where it needs to be. Then, you know, either I'll throw some of my money in, which I've done before. I'm not drawing a salary on Space Command, or I go to my investors or whatever. I come up with some way of finding how to fix it, because for me, the lovely part of this is the quality is the main thing. And so I have the time and I have the wherewithal to constantly improve stuff until people all, you know, everyone says, this is amazing, this is great. And, you know, I'm very pleased with where we are now. I love the first half hour, but just wait, you know, a few more weeks and you'll see something even more amazing.
Another iteration of the first half an hour,
yeah,
now what
yeah.
I've got up right now?
Yes, in the next few weeks. And again, it won't. Many scenes will be exactly as they are now, because they're wonderful, in my opinion. But certainly the driving scene we're going to work on. Certainly the opening sequence will have a lot of differences. The dramatic incidents will be the same, but the shots will be very different looking. And again, it's not that what's there is bad at all. I like it. But when you're presented with a possibility of doing something that's even more interesting and exciting, I have the freedom to do that. You know, I've never had a project like this where I've been so transparent with my audience and so brought them into the process. But for me, I love that. And if they're willing to take that journey with me, if they find it interesting, I mean, for one thing, it must be really cool for a fan to say, hey, this sequence, I'm not happy with it. And then all of a sudden the creator of the show goes, well, yeah, let's fix it. And then it's fixed. And that doesn't mean that I'm going to be doing that with every negative comment. I mean, you know, if somebody doesn't like Bob Picardo, I'm not going to put somebody else in, or Doug Jones.
No,
you know,
I love them. Don't change them at all. No, but I'll tell you something. As a fan, you know, as a viewer, I'm going to, you know, go back downstairs to my computer, and the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to look at the new version of this, and I'm going to compare it to the original.
Yeah.
And, yeah, 2 weeks later, I'll post your, you know, re-revised one on FanFilm Factor, because I think it's fascinating to watch that iterative process.
Yes.
You know, that's a very unique thing. So, you know, I mean, I'd say that, you know, at this point, I mean, Space Command is, for all intents and purposes, it's a movement, it's a community. I mean, obviously you have thousands of donors that gave you $33,000 before you even opened this up to the public for this most recent, you know, Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's the crux of what you have in Space Command is, and why you're getting so many donations, is that people really feel part of this community. Obviously, they know, took a chance on you back in 2012, and then, you know, it's now 6 years later, they're finally seeing what they gave their money to, but it was worth the wait. And we, I think we do, as donors, feel this camaraderie, this kinship, and this connection to you. I mean, I'm very happy that you're doing all of these very frequent updates. We do hear from you, which is really important.
It's fun, and I'm so gratified that people are so patient with me and so understanding. It was interesting, at one point someone was saying, why is it taking so long? And someone contacted me and they said, take the time you need to take, and I don't say this lightly because I've just entered hospice. And I contacted him. I actually got his phone number and I called him. And I said, you mean you're, and he said, yeah, I've got terminal cancer, you know, and I thought, wow. And so what I did was I said, listen, I'll send you the rough cut. I'm not doing this with anyone else, but I sent him the rough cut of the 2-hour pilot and the 40 minutes that we'd shot of the second one because, you know, he probably wouldn't be here to see the final product. So I just did that. And to have someone say, take the time, even though I may not be here to see it, was so profoundly moving to me and so much in the spirit of what we're doing that I thought, okay, I'm on the right track. And interestingly enough, I just got a message from him and he's still with us. And I think that's wonderful because this was about a year, year and a half ago. So hang in there. You know?
So that's a really touching story. And I think, yeah, I mean, you've hit on that. You know, I compare Space Command a lot to another show that you mentioned recently, Babylon 5.
Yes.
Because, you know, Joe Straczynski was also very, very connected to the fans, sometimes, you know, so much so that they would yell at him on Usenet back then, you know, get back to work, write more scripts. But I remember a similar story from Joe, I think it was in the second season of Babylon 5, that somebody had told him that she was terminal. And,
yes.
But what happened was she said, you know, can you tell me how Babylon 5 ends? And, you know, he emailed her back and said, you know, sorry, but, you know, that's a secret. You'll just have to wait, you know, and talk with everybody else. And she said, unfortunately, I won't be able to.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, she explained that she, you know, was also terminal. And if I remember correctly, Joe brought her in to his office and shared with her how the series was going to end. So when you told me that story, I thought to myself, yeah, you know, that's an amazing thing. Because Joe Straczynski was also, like you, you know, he was the controller of Babylon 5.
Yes.
In his case, Warner took mostly a hands-off approach to him only because he was so far out up in Valencia that nobody wanted to drive all the way out there and say, okay, change this and change that. It was too much of a schlep.
Exactly. Yes, well, it's funny because Joe told me that story about the young woman that he told the entire story to. I was very moved by that. And a lot of people don't know it, but I actually started him in live-action television. We came up in animation together, and then I made the jump over to live-action, and I was developing a show called Captain Power. And they wanted me to story-edit it after a year of me developing the pilot and Bible. And I was writing features at the time, and I said, listen, I can't do the job, but I'll recommend someone you've never heard of. He's never done live action, but if he can't do the job, I'll guarantee him, and I'll step in and do the job if he can't. And that was Joe Straczynski, and the two producers were John Copeland and Doug Netter, who were the two producers he ended up doing Babylon 5 with. And so I actually read the Babylon 5 pilot script 5 years before he sold the show, and I thought it was a terrific pilot. And I wrote for the show during the first season. And so that was, I was very impressed with what Joe and John Copeland and Doug Netter were able to pull off, as well as Ron Thornton, the VFX supervisor, who created a revolution in how VFX were done in television. And he worked in Space Command as well until his untimely death a year or two ago.
I didn't know that you were one of the people responsible for Babylon 5. That's
pretty cool. Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing is, you know, people think of Hollywood as sort of a dog-eat-dog place, but in reality, many of us who work in science fiction television know and respect and like each other, so frequently we'll call each other, we'll give each other advice, we'll make introductions, we'll open doors, we'll do things to help each other. So, you know, I just on Saturday, Ron Moore came and talked to a class I was teaching of aspiring showrunners, and I saw Brandon Braga this morning at the gym, and, you know, it's like we do know each other, we do hang out, and Mark Fergus and his partner who run The Expanse, Mark Fergus is a good friend, et cetera, you know, so we really are. You know, in fact, when I was writing for Sliders, when I was a producer on Sliders, and I needed some pseudoscience on parallel dimensions, I contacted Mike Okuda, who at the time was working on Deep Space Nine, and he sent over a bunch of scientific papers. So, you know, so we really are rooting for each other. We're thrilled when something good happens for one of us.
Well, it sounds like something good is happening for you. So let's wrap things up. Do you have any last messages for the folks that are still listening about Space Command and your Kickstarter?
Well, yes. I mean, mainly, you know, they can definitely go on Kickstarter and check it out. Or if they want to buy shares in Space Command, they can email me at markzickrey@gmail.com. They can subscribe to my YouTube channel, Mr. Sci-Fi. But the main thing I want to say is just to thank them, because if not for them, this wouldn't exist. It really wouldn't. So this wasn't some calculation by a corporation as to what they thought would sell, you know, commercial time. This was my audience having the same heart as I had when I was 10 and Star Trek debuted. It's that belief in the good part of humanity. And I'm really, really grateful that so many people have helped me make this happen.
Well, we're grateful to you for making it happen. I mean, it's been a long road getting from there to here, but, you know, it's coming together. It's looking fantastic. I can't wait to see more iterations. I can't wait to see the rest of the first episode and beyond. And, you know, for folks who are still thinking of donating right now, the stretch goals are just these casting announcements. Mm-hmm. So your last one was the addition of Ethan Phillips as the grandson of Robert Picardo's character.
No, Armin Shimerman. He'll be the grandson of Bob Picardo.
Armin Shimerman, that's right.
We're just about to announce some more stretch goals that are very, very exciting and are not specific to casting.
But it is sort of interesting because I noticed that by saying it's going to be, you know, Robert Picardo's grandson, obviously by an older actor named Armin Shimerman, that sort of told me Space Command is going to be multi-generational.
Absolutely.
You know, so it really is intriguing to me where this is going to be. I've only seen a half an hour of it yet. I want to see more. So, folks, seriously, if you've got a few extra shekels lying around, money's burning a hole in your pocket, go ahead, click on the link, donate a little bit to Space Command, because it really is. It is a community like the community that came together for Babylon 5 and for other sci-fi shows that you love, that were not corporation-produced. And so really I'd say, you know, give Mark your support because he's a fan like us and he's doing it for really for all the right reasons.
Well, thanks. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. So we'll talk again soon and I'm always happy to be with you.
Well, thanks a lot, Mark. Best of luck to you.
You too. Bye-bye.